In this episode of the Solidatus podcast, co-founders and co-CEOs Philip Dutton and Philip Miller will take a close look at the key differences between data lineage and data management and how these capabilities are being adopted by companies in today's ecosystem.
Welcome to the inaugural episode of the Solidatus podcast series. I'm Jeremy Grant, and we'll be kicking off this podcast series with a discussion today that will introduce the concept of data lineage, how it's being used today, and the types of opportunities it can uncover for businesses, particularly with data becoming such a valuable asset for companies worldwide. Can you illustrate the key differences between data lineage and data management?
Yeah, so I think, if we look at it, traditionally data lineage has been one of the components in the data management arsenal. Now, data management in a siloed world, in a non-connected world, lineage, isn't the primary because you don't have the connectivity, you don't have the complexity. And so therefore, just understanding the components and the components in isolation is enough to get you by. So think about kind of building a house, and let's not think about kind of modern building a house. Let's go back, 100 years and think about building a house when, we understand the components to a level. We don't really understand how they interact or interplay very well, but it doesn't matter because we're only building single-story buildings, or we're only building two-story buildings. We're not attempting to build the Shard or, the Empire State Building. Now, as you become a more mature, a more complex world, a more connected world, that very much shifts. So understanding components is no longer enough. It's now, how do those components intersect and interact? So if I put this particular beam in my house and I use these particular bolts to secure it, will those two types of metal have an interaction that is going to cause that beam to rust in the next 5 years? You need to understand that when you're building complex structures. When you're building simple structures, you don't. And so the lineage is really now, for us and for many, I think, becoming the primary. It's about the connectivity and the intersection of those data points and materials to really drive. And so that's, I think, the key differences.
I think one of the other things for me is with the, I have my own words to put into the conversation, is operational. I see it very much as a what's actually happening. So one of Phil's great examples is the difference between Google Maps and the Ordnance Survey map. One's highly accurate at a point in time and the other's broadly accurate all the time. And actually the world, because of the pace of change, kind of needs to be broadly accurate all the time. We can't see what something looked like a year ago or 3 years ago when a cartographer went past. And that for me is one of the calls to arms. We wanted to see things as they change, and we want up-to-date information. So operationalizing data, making it here and now thing is very important.
Yes, I suppose inherent in the phrase data management is the idea of just sort of managing it as it goes along. Whereas data lineage, I imagine, what I'm hearing you say, is it's a far more holistic thing. Allowing you to track and manage and understand it in a far more 360 degree way, and not necessarily on a day-to-day way the whole time, but have visibility into the future and processes and so forth, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, do you want to know that there was a traffic jam yesterday, or do you want to know that there's a traffic jam in front of you?
Right.
I mean, honestly, that's the difference, right?
Yeah, exactly. Great. How has the global pandemic, and feel free either of you to jump in on this, but how has the global pandemic changed the mindset and overall approach that firms are taking?
So I think the biggest thing is, it's the way people worked. So a lot of the world was sent home. A lot of the world had to make judgment calls on its businesses and its supply chains and all sorts of things. And this holistic lineage of how an organization was built became far more useful than just trying to read a textbook that was written, a couple of years ago on how your organization should operate. You needed to be sophisticated in a way to see how your organization was operating in changing circumstances. So to come back to the previous the previous point, right? The pandemic forced change. One of the memes that I thought was the best meme in, you know, it, the whole coronavirus or coronavirus time was what's forced the IT revolution or the digital revolution on your business? Was it the CEO, the CIO, the CDO, or COVID-19? And frankly, COVID-19 pushed more change through organizations at a faster pace with less red tape than I think just about anything else could. In many respects, businesses were on a war footing. And so that the mindset and how people were approaching data became an emergency. It transcended a deadline in many ways. People had to do stuff yesterday. And so that immediacy, that immediacy in and of itself bred a complete change in the mindset of how data needed to be operated. And our approach, and our approach and our mantra around data lineage and lineage first became something that was, oh yeah, of course we do it that way. That's how we work.
Yeah, I think exactly as Phil said, it really has sparked a revolution. It really has pushed things far faster and further forward than they would have been otherwise. It's also introduced challenges because now we've got disparate working and you've got people who need to access data, but they can't ask the person next to them because the person's not next to them. They have to have a 30-minute Zoom call or a Teams call to find out a piece of information which would have been a 30-second snippet. And so therefore, the intellectual repositories and the storage of that intellectual property of the organization, the thing that is unfortunately kept in people's heads, and then there is no way for it to be captured and utilized in an easy fashion, that context that surrounds the data made things more challenging. And so what we've seen is people realizing this and then starting to look for how do I actually keep some of this information in my organization? How do I keep it relevant? How do I keep it connected? And so you've seen a dramatic shift in the thinking about data over the last few years, which is fantastic to see. We need this revolution. We're coming to that point of we've got so much data and so much change and so much complexity that 2007, 2008 was obviously a fairly significant crash globally, but we haven't really repaired the underlying data and the ecosystem that supports it. And so we've made efforts forward, but it's not where it needs to be for us to be accelerating at this pace forever.
Okay, let me turn this to Philip. Data is becoming increasingly sophisticated and complex. How has the trajectory of data lineage capabilities evolved with that? And can you outline some of the things that Solidata specifically is doing to ensure it stays ahead of the innovation curve? Philip.
Goodness, this is a wide question. So data is becoming more sophisticated and complex, and the use cases are very diverse. We can see data being consumed and put to work in many more places and in many more ways, from things like banking and finance, governments becoming increasingly involved in supporting people's lives, for example, all the way through to the inevitable discussions about privacy in everyday life, like social media. A question, but that is reasonable and one that is now enshrined in a lot of legislation, is where is my data used? If you've sold my data to someone, where is it being used by them? And if they've sold it, where is it being used by the person it's been sold from, been sold to? And so, first of all, that's got lineage written all over it as a problem. But kind of implicit in that is that you're asking a question at a point in time, and you're saying, well, last week I had this thing happen to me, and I want to know where my data is used. And it could be that you're an executive in a bank and you've had some reporting in the past and you need to find out what happened at that point in time. And you may well see a regulation coming towards you and you're an executive again and you're saying, well, now how do we conform to that regulation? What's it going to cost me in the future? There's been plenty of privacy scandals, which are reasonably good descriptions of this. So naturally, there's been the British Airways data leak. That was at a point in time over a period of time. It was fixed, and you wouldn't want to do some you would want to do some investigation as to what happened, what changed at a specific point in the past. How was it remediated? How can you prove that it's been remediated? How can you prove you're not going to have the problem going forward? And so specifically, Solidatus, you know, really has at its core, you know, the understanding of time. And, you know, that's one of our true, you know, reptilian pieces of functionality. Right from the very beginning, we understood that time is a factor in people's planning. You know, you do investigations in the past, you plan in the future, and you want to know what's going on right now. So at our core, we understand that time is a factor in design. And with that in mind, we've developed right from the beginning an understanding that data has a life cycle, and organizations have a life cycle, and organizations and data interact with other organizations and data that also have life cycles. So the collaborative aspect of the software, the time-based understanding of the real world, I think sit as some of our strongest differentiators. And honestly, because of the way that we built the software, very, very, very difficult for others to if you like, get their arms around and at the same time replicate the same functionality. And I know Phil would say that the software is naturally intuitive, and it feels engaging. I sometimes say to people, we're gamifying things that are very dry. It's a very dry, very expensive subject. And if you can make it engaging and intuitively so, I think you're winning.
Yeah, I think this is really one of the key things that Phil touched on earlier, was that operationalization and the how do you make this effective in an organization. And the intuitiveness is something which I think for a lot of the older technologies that they really, you know, can't update or didn't think about or didn't have the capabilities to produce at the time. And so it's, you know, if you think about, and if, I guess if you're old enough to go back to when, you know, you got Windows 95 and it came with a, you know, several hundred page manual to help you understand how to install it and how to just to use this operating system, which if you compare it in operating systems is a fairly simplistic operating system compared to, let's go with an iPhone. How big is the manual that you get for a new iPhone? You actually don't get one. It's intuitive. You understand how to use it. It's easy to use. And that's really one of the most difficult things in software development is to develop intuitive interfaces. And that's one of the things that I think really sets us out from our competitors, is you can learn our product in an hour. You can start using it and be creating value for your organization in that hour. And that's the real differentiator. When, you know, a product or a competitor takes a month or 2 months to install and, you know, several months to learn before you can then actually get your hands on and you know, get working, we are trying to keep up with that rate of data change, and it needs to be fast. And so I think those key USPs that Phil kind of highlighted and that last one are really the big things for us.
Yeah. Okay. We touched on regulation earlier on. How... Philip, is data lineage factoring into the regulatory landscape? Is it something that regulators and even chief compliance officers are leveraging specifically?
Well, that's again one of these wide questions. I think so. One of the great interpretations of a favourite piece of legislation of ours, GDPR, is given out by the Information Commissioner's Office in the UK, and it picks on some language in GDPR itself. So this is the general data protection regulations put out by the European Union that at the moment is still enshrined in UK law, but it's kind of replicated all around. And it sets out an approach, and the approach says by default and design. And so this is front and center on the Information Commissioner's Office website, so the ICO's website. And I think taking those mantras, it's an approach and a philosophy to heart. Actually, when you make a change, if you're in the old data management world, you're going to have to go through probably a series of governance steps. Governance is part of management. You're going to have to get things approved for use. You're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to go through documentation steps, this, that, and the other. And this is before you've even really done an impact assessment of how things work and how things change. But the funny thing is that there isn't just GDPR in the world. There's lots of other regulations, and they all interact and act over data. And actually, so you've got potentially quite a lot of things changing at one moment in time. And if you go traditional, so old school, you can't actually probably satisfy all the regulatory change simultaneously. Now, one of the great things about getting lineage right within a regulated data ecosystem or regulated context is that you can simulate all those changes in one go and see how they affect your landscape and see whether you're compliant and write policy on the top of it to specifically leverage the knowledge that you're given because you have a lineage enabled organization. Now, doing it the other way around, you could govern some data and then find that when you try to implement the change, it's not feasible. Now, personally speaking, as a, you know, from my own experience, we're technologists, right? We were frontliners for so many years, 2 decades, you know, each of us. Finding out at the end of a project that something doesn't work is kind of the worst case scenario in any project, and often is the root cause of projects costing far too much money and face being lost all around the place by sponsors who really ought to have found out much earlier that things weren't going to work. So again, another side effect of a lineage first approach is that, and this may sound a bit peculiar to start with, but you can fail fast. It's not just failing faster. That's a DevOps race, but you can start fast. And because you can start a project quickly and not have to go through all of these hoops, these documentation steps, you know, by default and design going through a committee, because you can start really fast, the fail fast step comes before great expense and great investment by a whole organization in a project. And actually that is mega for an organization to be able to get to the point where you can see feasibility early in a cycle. It enables far more project success than you would have another way around.
Yeah, interesting. We're coming towards the end here, and I've got one more question, and then I want to ask a sort of extra bonus question at the end. But Phil, do you want to take this one, which is that Philip's just dealt with some regulatory aspects. Data lineage is something that can provide a number of benefits, not just for financial institutions, but many other industries as well. What are some of the industries where it is already playing an integral role, and what other sectors could it gain greater traction on in the next year?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And I think really if you look at data lineage, it's not financial lineage, it's not pharmaceutical lineage, it's data lineage. So data lineage should be ubiquitous across all industries. You know, everyone has the same data challenges. And so therefore it's gained traction mostly where there has been the need for control, the need for being able to produce evidence in order to create trust. I mean, trust is ultimately what we're all trying to get to, the trust of the data. So a regulator asks for you to provide them with, you know, with reporting because they want to trust that you have a handle on what's going on in your organization, that you know your exposure to Lehman Brothers. And because you have this in a regulated environment, you know, financial services, pharmaceuticals, they get it first, right? They're the ones that are kind of dealing with it. But now, as this is being rolled out, and I think, you know, the healthcare industry is probably over the last 18 months has been the one that's probably seen the most data change, because they're having to deal with this pandemic and the huge volumes of data that are being created for it. And it's not just sort of singular dimensional data. This is multi-dimensional data that is all interconnected. And so that industry has obviously been going through a big resurgence, I think, in the lineage and data management space. A lot of the new areas that we're exploring is with organizations in those sectors. So whether it be, you know, a government organization who is helping to provide loans for supporting the COVID response, or whether it is a national health service to ensure that, you know, the right data is being collected to tell a country whether it goes into lockdown or not. Those are really, really important things. And I think more and more of the organizations which previously haven't had to deal with regulation are now doing so. And so it really is, you know, across all industries. I think one of the areas where we've seen probably the most significant growth and the next big data problem coming is ESG. ESG is a huge data problem. You know, we're trying to understand very, very complex contexts, so not a singular one, all of these contexts which intersect with each other, and trying to have a level of trust and quality of data so that we can accurately report, we can ensure that the, you know, the investments that we're making are helping to create a better, more green world. And that whole area is really the boom. And I think that's, for us, one of the big areas that we're certainly, you know, gaining traction and putting a lot of focus into, because it's the next frontier. It's almost the new data Wild West, and it needs to be corralled into something which is, you know, structured and governed and managed in the same way that you look at something like financial reporting is for most organizations. You know, there are standards which have been laid down, and those have been in place for a while, and people are dealing with that.
So ESG is particularly interesting.
Well, you actually, that was going to be my bonus question. So you got there before you preempted me. So carry on, Philip.
Well, so ESG is unique. You're an institution. Let's say you're mega bank, big bank, and you're providing an advisory service to your clients, and you say to your clients, "I need your ESG rating. I need to understand how your E and your S and your G are rated and looked after and qualified and quantified. And I need that in order to onboard you as a client." You know, it's going to be important now. And the client's going to turn around to the big bank, mega bank, and say, "But actually, you, big bank, your ESG rating becomes part of my ESG rating. So if I use you as my bank, I need to include your ESG rating into my ESG rating." So this is a really, really funny scenario now. So if I go to a bank that's got a bad ESG rating, if I've got a good ESG rating, I then have a bad ESG rating. So internally as well as externally, I need, as mega bank, to understand all my clients, and I also need to understand myself, because my clients need to understand myself, and I need to do that in a way that's ubiquitous. In other words, if you're talking apples, I'm talking apples. So that the rating is, if you like, shareable. So I can aggregate these two ratings together to give my clients a new rating because they're using me as a bank. And this goes all the way through the whole of the world ecosystem now. It's starting to get teeth. And actually, if you look at us as an organization, we would go to one of our clients and say, "We can be your client's tool for ESG, and we can be your tool for ESG. And because you use us, everything is mappable to everything else." And actually, how cool is that? Because suddenly you've kind of got yourself to a position of, well, uniformity, ubiquity, holistically taking into account the industry. So ESG in and of itself, it's a fascinating frontier. And there's like 1,500 plus different ways of representing it right now. And there's lots of different countries choosing lots of different approaches, but there will be harmonization. However, it's the only industry that I know where onboarding yourself into a bank can affect your own standing in the rest of the world. It's fascinating.
Well, that's probably a subject for a separate podcast in and of itself, actually. But I'm just going to thank you very much, Philip and Phil, for your great insights. You've been listening to the first episode in the Solidatus podcast series, and I've been speaking with co-founders and co-CEOs Phil Dutton and Philip Miller. Thanks very much for listening.